Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Join us for an in-depth look at Iowa agriculture. Here's your host, Brent Barnett.
It was a bitter cold week across Iowa with wind chills dipping down to around 25 to 27 below zero at times. Hopefully this cold snap will end sometime soon. Russ Parker, Dustin Hoffman, and Riley Smith will all join us later in the show, but we'll start things off, as always, with a quick check of the headlines. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers announced an $829.1 million investment this week for locks and dams along the upper Mississippi River. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley.
I always get a question about when are you guys going to fix the locks and dams? I always try to say prior to this bill, that's why we increased the diesel fuel for barges probably about 10 years ago to do that. But that still wasn't satisfactory to the people that would ask me the question. So I hope this $829 million will add to it.
The latest Rural Main Street Index shows rising input prices as the top threat in 2022 for farmers. Released Thursday, the index declined in January, though it remained above growth neutral for the 14th straight month. Overall, the region's reading for January fell to 61.1 from December's 66.7. We now join Russ Parker on Weekend Ag Matters for his faith-based food for thought.
I've heard music described as life itself, and I would wholeheartedly agree with that. Music has been an important part of my life for as long as I can remember. Early in life, I can recall singing in Sunday school, taking piano lessons with Mrs. Kopp, listening to my dad play his cornet, and my mom and her sister play the piano. And my mom's dad was a gifted, self-taught musician, playing the organ and the banjo, and her mother a whistler extraordinaire. And in high school, there were musicals and choir competitions, and my music hero, Mr. V, whose lessons have stuck with me to this day. Now, I'm not an accomplished musician by any means, but tickling the ivories every once in a while and singing at almost every opportunity brings peace and joy to my soul. The other day, we had choir practice. It's a community choir made up of all sorts, with a common denominator, a love for music and singing. We are directed by a man I have a great deal of respect for, both as a musician and as a person. His father recently passed away, and in his final months, we were told, was not mentally sharp. A tough thing, I'm sure, for a son to deal with. Our choir director described a few times when he was able to play some old familiar hymns on the piano and sing them, and his father responded, recognizing the songs and even singing along. I can't think of a better example of music being therapeutic, in this case, for both the father and his son. And the other day, I was driving on the interstate and came upon a car that I was going to pass, and I noticed that the driver was quite animated, and so I stayed behind for a while and soon discovered the radio or the iPod was on. There were air drums, head bopping to a beat, and based on the facial expressions I could see, I'm sure there was loud singing going on inside that car. As I passed, there was a middle-aged woman smiling sheepishly as I gave a thumbs up. Definitely music therapy going on inside that car. So in these cold days of winter, my hope that somewhere in your soul, music speaks to you. I'm reminded of an old Charles Wesley hymn. Oh, for a thousand tongues to sing my great Redeemer's praise, the glories of my God and King, the triumphs of His grace. Food for thought, I hope. This is Russ Parker. Have a blessed day.
That's it for segment one on this week's program. We'll join Dustin Hoffman when we return.
This is Money Minute, farm financial tips from AgriFinancial's Ag Experts. And today I'm with Barry Rager, Regional Sales Officer with AgriFinancial, discussing the ins and outs of Farm Service Agency loan programs. And Barry, the FSA Guaranteed Loan Program is also a great option for farmers who are looking for an alternative financing option.
So let's say there's a farmer out there and they're not in trouble, but they can't necessarily meet the commercial loan program requirements, such as 30% down or such as specific cash flows or credit ratios, and this can be on both purchasing real estate or refinancing real estate. And where we see this program a lot is where someone has real estate, they've had a rough year, something's happened, or they've had a rough 2 years, cash flow's tight, and they just need some relief on their current real estate. This is where we see this program coming in as a big advantage.
To connect with Barry or the ag lending expert in your area to discuss FSA loan programs, visit cgb-agfi.com. This has been Money Minute from AgriFinancial.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Dustin Hoffman.
As we continue on with Weekend Ag Matters this week, we are looking at almost being 2 years into the COVID-19 pandemic and over a year since vaccines became available. Yet there seems to be a lot of controversy and also resistance to the vaccines in rural America. I had the chance earlier this week to sit down with advisor to the president, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and he talked with me one-on-one about the situation in rural America and also reiterated his urge for rural Americans to become vaccinated. Dr. Fauci, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be with you.
So obviously our audience here is usually rural Americans and farmers and things like that. Tell us about what kind of trends we're seeing in rural America. We hear so much about what goes on in the big urban centers, but what are we seeing in rural America?
Well, what has happened, not only with this variant, but also with the Delta variant, we're dealing with an Omicron variant right now, which is a highly, highly transmissible virus, which has gone in a very, very steep incline in the big cities. It goes up acutely, and it's starting even in New York City to come back down a bit. In the rural areas, such as your listeners and your viewers, it usually occurs a little bit later than in the big city. So I believe, although sometimes it's difficult to accurately predict, that you're going to start seeing a gradual increase up and up and up, and you will probably peak later and come down a bit later than what we're seeing in the bigger cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, and Chicago. But you're not going to be able to escape from the fact that many, many people will get infected. Now, fortunately, on a case-by-case basis, Omicron appears to be less severe with regard to hospitalizations and deaths. However, the sheer volume of the numbers of people that get infected means that even though on a person-by-person basis it's less severe, there are still going to be a lot of people in the hospital, and some, usually the elderly or those with underlying condition, and particularly among the unvaccinated, are going to get into serious trouble. And that's the reason why in rural areas, particularly those areas that don't have the healthcare capability of the hospitals with intensive care units, it could stress the hospital and the healthcare system. One of the best ways around that is to try and get through this. If you're not vaccinated, please get vaccinated. If you are vaccinated, get your booster shot. One thing we've learned very clearly, that as bad and as transmissible as this Omicron variant is, the booster shots do very, very well in protecting you against severe disease. In fact, if you look at the people who are in the hospital with severe disease, the unvaccinated and unboosted have a much, much higher level of severity than do the vaccinated and boosted people. So that's the thing we want to do, as well as the normal public health measures, that if you're in an indoor setting, a congregate setting with a lot of people that you don't know their vaccine status, to wear a mask, because we know for sure that masks not only help protect you, But if you happen to be infected and don't even know it because you have an asymptomatic infection, it prevents you from spreading it to someone else who might actually get a severe outcome from the infection.
Well, that would lead me to my next question. We're hearing reports, you know, that the cloth masks are no longer that effective against Omicron and that you need to get those N95 masks. Is that what we're seeing with this Omicron variant more?
You know, it's a gradation of effectiveness. If you look at I know what the principle that the CDC says, it's better to wear any mask than not wear a mask at all. So some people say, well, I can't get a high quality mask, so I won't wear a mask. That's a mistake. Clearly, the N95s, if they're well fitted and they fit well and you get comfortable enough that you can wear it, is the best possibility. Next is a KN95 mask. Not yet as effective, but very, very effective. Then you work your way down to a surgical or double and triple ply mask. And then you get to a pure cotton mask. Each of them have some degree of effectiveness. The cotton masks, the cloth masks, may not work as well as an N95, but it's certainly better than no mask at all. So the advice is get your hands on a mask that's the highest quality, that fits well, and that you could tolerate wearing. You know, I wear a KN95. It fits me well. I could wear it for a long time, and it works well for me.
Now, we have a lot of farmers, when we talk about vaccines, they say, hey, I'm on the farm by myself a lot. I have very minimal exposure to the public. What kind of a message can we give to those people that say, hey, I'm not going to town that often. Why do I need to be vaccinated?
You know, particularly with Omicron, we're seeing people who even try very hard to avoid getting infected are getting infected. Now, if you're a healthy, strapping young farmer, the chances of you're getting a serious outcome are very, very low. But what you might inadvertently do, innocently and inadvertently, is get infected. You may have no symptoms at all or minimally symptomatic, and then accidentally, as it were, without even knowing it, spread it to someone you care for, an elderly parent or grandparent or someone who has got an immune suppression due to cancer chemotherapy, or a child who has an immunodeficiency. Nobody would want to do that. I'm positive that no one would want to feel that they're spreading it to someone that's causing that person suffering and maybe severe disease. So there are a couple of reasons to get vaccinated, not only to protect yourself, because you can't guarantee that you're not going to get infected or you're not going to get a serious outcome, but also you want to be part of your communal and community responsibility to prevent the infection from spreading throughout your community.
Now, we see it more in rural America, but we are seeing it in urban America too, the resistance to the vaccine, whether it's the information they believe or the fear of what's in it and how fast it was rolled out. I mean, what kind of assurance can people in rural America get? Is it a matter of sitting down and talking with their trusted family physician and talk to them as well? Or what kind of research can they be doing?
Well, you make a very good point. The easiest way and the best and most effective way to get people to get vaccinated is to be speaking with a trusted messenger. That could be your family physician for your children. That could be the pediatrician. That could be a clergy member or someone you trust. Because if you look at the data and you're only asking people to look at the facts, not the misinformation or the disinformation that you sometimes see on social media, and that is, this vaccine has been given to billions and billions of people throughout the world. It is shown to be highly effective and very safe. And when you say, well, the reason it took a short period of time to prove its efficacy is that we were doing scientific work for decades before that led up to our ability to develop a vaccine very quickly. No corners were cut. No safety was compromised. It was done in the proper way. And now, if you're looking at it, more than a year past the time, I mean, the vaccine began to be rolled out in 2020, 2021. You have over a year's worth of experience with the vaccine. Right now, it's shown to be extremely safe and extremely effective. And that's the reason why you really want to see that if you can get people to understand why it's for their benefit that they should go get vaccinated. You know, we started vaccinating people in the January 2021, and we've gone through an entire years of experience, and there's no doubt that if a person is vaccinated and boosted, the chances of their getting seriously ill compared to an unvaccinated person is very low, very low.
So I've got two more questions for you, Dr. Fauci. First one, do you foresee us eventually getting to a place where the vaccine could be something similar to the flu, where you just go get your shot and you kind of can relax about it?
That is entirely conceivable. I'm not so sure we'll need to be vaccinated every year. I hope not, but if we have to, so be it. As long as it's protecting you, it's a much more effective vaccine than influenza vaccine. That I think people need to appreciate. The efficacy of this is 93, 94, 95% effective. So it's one of the most effective vaccines. Maybe it'll have to be every couple of years, or maybe it'll have to be every year. We don't know that right now. We just have to see how things play out.
And the last question I have for you is, obviously there's been so much work done on prevention and information about the vaccination and stuff, but from a personal standpoint, I had a situation with a family member who had COVID, went through the quarantine time, was cleared to return to work. 4 days later, had a medical issue as a result of the effects of having already had COVID, weakening of blood vessels led to a stroke. The doctors in the hospital that we dealt with were saying, I wish there was as much effort put forth into helping people understand what's going to happen in their lives after COVID. Are we seeing a way to get more and more of that information out as we're getting more details about life afterward?
Oh, Dustin, that's an excellent question. And in fact, the U.S. government is putting about $1.5 billion in trying to study and studying cohorts of people who have recovered from the acute phase and now have lingering signs and symptoms. Some quite severe, and sometimes it lasts for weeks to months. It's referred to as long COVID, is what the name of it is. It's a more detailed name, but the one that people use the most is long COVID. And we have cohorts of thousands and thousands of people we're following to try and find out what the pathogenic mechanism of how people, when they recover from COVID, still have the persistence of some serious signs and symptoms. So we're learning a lot about that.
All right. So last thing I'll let you wrap up with is just one more message for our people in rural America, rural Iowa, about the situation we're in as we find ourselves today in January.
Yeah, the message is that we're in the middle of a very severe outbreak of a very transmissible virus. Please get vaccinated. If you're vaccinated, please get boosted and try and stay safe by avoiding crowded situations and wearing a mask.
Well, Dr. Fauci, I thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us here today.
Thank you very much for having me, Dustin. It's a pleasure to be with you.
That again was Dr. Anthony Fauci with us here on Weekend Ag Matters. When we come back after this break, Riley Smith will be visiting with Monty Shaw of the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association.
Hi, my name is Ethan Smith, and I've been a certified crop advisor in Iowa for about 6 years. The Iowa CCA program is valuable to me because it helps keep me informed on new topics and research around the industry, including soils, insects, diseases, and much more. It's also a great way to network with others around the state and beyond. Iowa is known for its crops, and that's why we're here. To learn more about becoming a certified crop advisor, visit iowacca.org.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's Riley Smith.
I'm talking with Monty Shaw, the Executive Director for the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association. Monty, can you give me an overview of the summit that's going on later this month?
Yeah, so for several years now, we've put on an Iowa Renewable Fuels Summit. This year's is going to be January 25th. The key thing is it's free and open to the public. So it's a one-day summit. It's going to be in Des Moines at the Iowa Events Center. The webpage, if people are interested, is just iowarenewablefuelsummit.org. You can register there. It doesn't cost anything, but we do have people register so we can set it up right. It's going to kick off. The governor's going to be there and talk about her vision for renewable fuels. We're going to have people talking about how we're going to have biofuels play a role in the low carbon thing. We're going to talk about public policy and federal policy. We're going to talk about, we have the USDA chief economist, Seth Meyer, coming in, as well as Ernie Goss, who's kind of an expert on rural areas out of Creighton University, to talk about economic issues. We're even going to have a panel talking about emerging markets. There's a lot of new opportunities. It's not just going to be, you know, for cars and trucks anymore. So I think we're going to have a really good day where anybody can come and get a real good handle on what the industry is confronting today, but what the possibilities for the future are.
Right, and obviously with the recent developments, those possibilities could be pretty big. Do you want to talk just a little bit about kind of the role that biofuels does play in, you know, the Iowa agricultural industry?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, 60% of Iowa's corn goes into an ethanol plant. Now, it doesn't all come out as ethanol. We produce a lot of animal feed called distiller's grains. So in corn oil, for that matter, and other things. But, you know, 60% of Iowa's corn is going to be processed at an ethanol plant. So it's just hugely important. With biodiesel, it adds a lot of value to the soybean crop. It also adds a lot of value to animals. The fact that the animal fat has value leads to the overall animal being worth more. So it really ripples throughout the economy. And then on the flip side, consumers in Iowa benefit because we have these blends of ethanol. The more ethanol you put in, the lower cost your fuel is. That's more money in your pocket to spend on other things for you and your family. And so it ends up supporting tens of thousands of jobs. About 4% of our entire Iowa economy's GDP is underpinned by biofuels and how that revolves through the economy. So it's very important for our ag economy, but quite frankly, it's very important for Iowa's entire economy.
Yeah, definitely. And then taking a look here at the program for the Fuel Summit, and I will have a link to this in the story probably, but one of the things that's obviously pretty eye-catching is the Biofuels Policy Roundtable. And of course, everybody thinking biofuels policy right now with the recent Supreme Court decision to not hear the year-round E15 case. I'm assuming we'll probably see that on the docket.
Yes, absolutely. So that's one of our most popular panels every year. We'll bring in experts from Washington, D.C. and elsewhere, people that are really plugged in on all facets, ethanol, biodiesel, other advanced biofuels, and talk about this. So E15, how do we make that happen based on, you know, being able to sell it year round? There are opportunities to move forward on that. Let's discuss those, even though the Supreme Court, you know, did not take up a case we were hoping would fix a problem. But, you know, the renewable fuel standard, the EPA has rolled out an annual RFS rule that's kind of good, bad, and ugly, right? So is there, you know, what's that? Do we think it can go from good, bad, and ugly to good, good, and bad? I mean, you know, how, you know, where do we think that can end up? And what's that going to do going forward? What's carbon policy going to be, right? Some of your listeners might be very passionate about carbon policy. Some might think it's a silly thing to do. But, you know, we don't have that luxury as an industry. We have to assume that we're going to be operating in a low carbon energy future. And how are the policies rolling down to help us be a player in that? Or quite frankly, some that are being talked about in Washington, D.C. would slam a door in our face, even though we're an excellent source of low carbon fuel. So, you know, we'll definitely be talking about issues like that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you mentioned our listeners. Of course, this summit is very important for, you know, big figures in the ag industry, especially in the Midwest, to attend. But why would this be even more appealing for, you know, just regular farmers to attend this event?
Yeah, the summit, I mean, I think if you're a lifelong industry expert, you're going to come and you're still going to learn some things. You're going to hear some interesting ideas. You're going to pick up some of the latest news. But we really do target this at the general public. So anyone, whether you're just a farmer who's always wanted to learn more, maybe you're not even a farmer, maybe you're someone in the city, but you just know how big an impact this has, or you're interested in, you know, climate policy, you're interested in, you know, just even what fuels you want to use when you go to the gas station. This is a chance to come and learn, and we target, you know, the remarks so that anybody can benefit from that. And that's why, thanks to our sponsors, that we'll recognize during the program and that are on our website, we keep this free and open to the public. This is a chance to get our side of the story out. You know, we don't have the deep pockets like Big Oil or some of these other folks to, you know, buy ads and, for that matter, buy politicians. So this is our chance to get our side of the story out and let people know what's happening. So I really think that, you know, if you have any interest. And in fact, one speaker I forgot that we've already got a big response to is we're having one of the, as near as we can tell, one of our nation's leading experts on rare earth metals and China coming to talk. As a lot of focus is on batteries and electric vehicles and all that, you know, are we about to trade our, we used to be dependent on our energy from the Middle East, right? Because that's where the oil came from. Well, now China controls 80%, they say, of the rare earth metals and a lot of the processing of those rare earth metals. And so are we going to be trading our energy dependence on the Middle East and oil for an energy dependence on China and rare earth metals that you have to have or you can't build these batteries? And so, you know, that's just an interesting perspective that I think you may not care about renewable fuels, but, you know, that has energy security implications. It has national security implications. So that's another topic that people might want to come and check out.
That's it for today's episode of Weekend Ag Matters. Be sure to join us again next weekend. For Russ Parker, Brent Barnett, and Dustin Hoffman, I'm Riley Smith, wishing you a great rest of your weekend.